It's time now for Optimal Health with Dr. Christopher Calipe. Dr. Calipe is an osteopathic physician, board certified in family practice and chelation therapy, anti-aging medicine. Dr. Calipe specializes in reconstructive and neurotherapy for chronic pain and musculoskeletal disorders. And he's achieved fellowship certification for stem cell therapy. Dr. Calipe's office number in Long Island is 516-794-0404. We will repeat that number throughout the show. Now, here's Dr. Christopher Calipe.
Welcome, friends, and thank you for tuning into the Optimal Health Program. Hope you're all doing well. As you know, we're going to take a look at some of the best literature in nutrition and medicine today. We'll take your calls and answer some questions about your concerns. Some of the topics that we typically run through, and we cover a great deal on each program, are vitamin and minerals testing, what vitamins are good for what, stem cell therapy, correcting hormone levels, looking at your digestive ability absorption, the Heidelberg test, looking at a comprehensive stool diagnostic test. So we're learning as much as we can about your body to keep you as healthy as possible. Great research on omega-3 fatty acids. We'll get to these articles within a few minutes. Homocysteine elevation found in children that have autistic spectrum disorders. Dietary B vitamins and methionine decrease breast cancer risk. Vitamin B administered preoperatively reduces the need for some of the medications used during surgery. Vitamin B6, very low in patients that are diagnosed with diabetes. So the list can go on and on. A lot of great articles. But as I say, we'll take your calls here, 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222, and you can get your call up on the air, 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222. The website, if you'd like to take a look at it, has a lot of great information, videos, etc. We're getting a few more videos up and set this week. We should have them on the website within a week or so after. The website's www.drcal.net, drcal.net, and we'd love for you to take a look at the articles there, 2,000 articles, 206 on heavy metals alone in a separate section, and lots of videos there for you to see. Okay, phone lines are open, 1-800-848-WABC, give us a call. Let's take a look at some of the research. Interesting research on omega-3 fatty acids. And I've been talking about fatty acids and balancing out the different fats and fatty acids in your diet for a long time. And I tell people, usually the omega-3s and olive oil are really the two best oils for you to use. Of course, coconut oil is great and MCT oil, but you want to get rid of the bad oils, the other oils, the animal fats, because they're more damaging than they are beneficial. You don't want margarine because of the trans fats. So we want you to have the best oils coming into your body on a regular basis. For a lot of people, they'll take either a tablespoon of olive oil first thing in the morning. It's great to kill germs and bacteria in your gut. And they'll take a tablespoon of the coconut oil at night because it's also great for brain function. So you need to have the good oils in, bad oils out. For those kids that are autistic, homocysteine elevation is common and prevalent in kids that are on the autistic spectrum. This is a study involving both healthy children and children that have autism spectrum disorders. Those had autism spectrum disorders had much, much higher homocysteine. It's an inflammatory marker in adults. It does lead to plaque in the blood vessels, but it also can affect different organs. And now they're saying that high homocysteine can affect brain function because you're not getting enough vitamins, number one. And number two, the homocysteine may affect blood flow to the brain. So important, again, to keep your vitamins, minerals, all of these good things in the right range. That's why we do the big blood test. Dietary B vitamins and methionine and a decrease in breast cancer risk. So this is a pretty big study. 718 women with breast cancer, those who had higher folate, had a reduced risk of breast cancer. Findings support the hypothesis that high folate intake may reduce breast cancer risk, and the association may vary by menopausal and estrogen receptor, progesterone receptor status. But again, once again, having great vitamins on board maximizes your health and protection. Methionine becomes glutathione. So that's another important part of the picture because glutathione is a great free radical scavenger. So the reality is, Once again, more benefit of getting the vitamins on board and getting them into a nice high range. Vitamin B6 in patients with type 2 diabetes. This is a study that talks about diabetics, and it shows that people that were diagnosed type 2 diabetic, their hemoglobin A1C was anywhere between 8 to 11, and those individuals had very, very low levels of vitamin B6. Now, of course, you want to monitor all the vitamins. You want to correct them. You want to use chromium, a low-carb diet, exercise, correcting hormone decline, and even stem cell therapy to help for the type 2 diabetic. And within those videos on my website, we certainly have videos of a patient that's diabetic that became non-diabetic over the course of about 2 months from doing that entire picture. Low-carb diet, exercise, correcting hormones, correcting vitamins, and stem cell therapy. So the mechanism or the recommendations that I make are really based upon what your body's saying, your body's telling me. So with a very thorough blood test, if we also do cardiovascular or neurologic testing, etc., putting all that information together allows us to change more things and really maximize your health and optimize your health. 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222. If you'd like to call in to ask a question, you could do so right now. Dietary omega fatty acids. Once again, more great research on fatty acids. Helps to stabilize resting heart rate. And this is a study that was done in a population of individuals 65 and older, and those that had occasional palpitations or regular beats had significant improvement. So we do a blood test looking at your fatty acids, and we get a breakdown of these things and look to see if they're in the right range. In most cases, we have to raise up the omega-3s, and in some cases have to tone down the omega-6. So omega-3 fatty acids are great to decrease inflammatory markers. They also are great to help to stimulate good prostaglandins. So another reason why you want to test for and then fine-tune your fatty acids. Dietary factors and risk of inflammatory bowel disease. I mean, I talk about inflammatory bowel disease virtually every day in practice because almost everybody comes in with a stomach complaint. I have a little bloating. I have a little irritable bowel. I have a big bowel problem. I have a colitis or Crohn's disease. And the conversation always has to include food allergy because 70% of your immune recognition is in your gut. So it's likely that if you have stomach problems, there are things that you're eating, whether the food itself, the chemicals in the food, an altered food, GMO food, is causing some sort of problem. Of course, you could have bacteria, viruses, fungal organisms that may add to this. There are a variety of other things that can do it. Medications may be irritating your body, but you don't have to have a symptom the moment that you eat a food. So you might be eating a food with some frequency that's really giving you a significant problem in your gut. Antibodies don't bind to your foods thoroughly in seconds so that you'd feel or see the symptom right away, like swelling of your lips or congestion or redness of your ears or skin. So in some cases, it takes either a few days to even a week to have enough antibodies bind to reach a threshold that will provoke a symptom somewhere in your body. So important to look at every part of that picture. Of course, we do the Heidelberg test to look at your digestive enzyme production, hydrochloric acid. We'll do the comprehensive stool test for look for different organisms that may be there. And of course, allergy testing. Intradermal is the most accurate technique because we're doing a skin test up on the outer area of the shoulder. Typically, scratch and prick tests have a lot of false negatives where you're positive, but the technique didn't pick up anything. Or, as well, a blood test for foods may not be good because you're not getting more than just a little bit of blood into that tube that, you know, comes from your arm. So a little bit of blood that's near the needle that takes 3 seconds to fill the tube is not a complete look at every possible allergen you might have. Those antibodies could be all over the place, and many times they don't show up in your blood. And then your total IgE antibody is high, which is proving the allergy. Then doing the skin testing will find it. Okay, phone lines are open, 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Bob in Staten Island. How are you?
Yes, good evening, Doctor. How are you today?
Great. Good, thank you.
Happy August.
Yep, there we are.
Which heavy metals are most injurious to the body?
Well, they're all bad. It's not as though there's one that does one thing and another that does another. You know, we do know that cadmium is linked with breast cancer, so that stands out a little bit. Aluminum is more associated with Alzheimer's disease. But they're all bad because they're 2 and 3 positively charged ions that might very well displace calcium, magnesium, potassium from getting to their tissues and cells to do the job they're supposed to do. So we know that people that have a heavy metal exposure are much higher risk for autoimmune disease, and that could be lupus, rheumatoid, MS, you know, neurological diseases, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, even stroke, arrhythmias of the heart. You know, we see a variety of different things that metals can do in just about every tissue of your body. I think that some people that become diabetic sooner than you might expect, and that's a hard term to quantify. Years ago, we thought diabetics were only people that are 60 and older, and now we're seeing type 2 diabetics in their 30s, and even sometimes younger. So I think that individuals who develop degenerative diseases earlier than we expect, heavy metals are playing a role by damaging the pancreas, for example, and now the pancreas isn't making as much insulin, or damaging the thyroid, or damaging the heart, or other tissues. So we have to look at these things, and of course the blood test only shows us what's near the needle. That's why we do a urine test for metals, and as well we do an IV to pull metals out, and then do a 24-hour urine to really see what's coming out. So lead, mercury, cadmium, nickel, arsenic, aluminum, these are the most common things we're exposed to.
Okay.
So realistically, you know, your body has to get these, you know, we have to get these things out of your body, because otherwise they just continue to cause more and more damage.
Okay, it's been a pleasure. Have a great night.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day now. Okay, phone lines are open. If you'd like to call in to ask a question, you could do so right now. Next caller is Catherine. Hi there. How are you? Catherine, you have to listen to the phone. Can you ask your question?
Hello?
Hi, how are you? Got to turn off your radio.
Okay, so my name is Catherine.
Okay.
And I have a question regarding my mother. I also have one concerning myself, but I want to talk to you first about my mother. She's 87 years old, and she has type 2 diabetes. She has hypertension, peripheral vascular disease, and she has high cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
But they're sort of, you know, under control. The thing about it is that...
Well, none of those things are really under control because they're damaging the body even though she's still on medications. Under control means their sugar is in a tighter range, but people will still progress and have vascular damage, neuropathy. You know, diabetes doesn't get better even on meds, so...
Okay, but the thing about it is that I visited her like 2 days ago after not seeing her for 4 months, and I realized that, you know, she uses a cane, but in the house, she can't walk. She's like a drunken man grabbing onto furniture to help her to get from one room to the other room.
Yeah, so there may be some neurological component to her diabetes where her nerves are being affected, whether centrally in the brain or, you know, near the spine and the nerve roots or going to her muscles and such. I mean, I can't comment much on someone that I haven't seen, but typically my recommendation is to be able to bring the person in so I can evaluate them and see what we can do to help them.
And she also has arthritis.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not expecting a miracle. After all, she's 87 years old, but I mean... And she's walking and hooped over, so I guess there's osteoporosis, you know, and a lot
There's probably a lot of things happening by the time she's 87. But again, we would need to do a really thorough blood test, see what's really going on with her body, and start to try to improve things. Maybe correct her vitamin levels. They're going to be very low because most people in their 80s don't take vitamins. Her hormone levels are probably going to be low. Thyroid, DHEA, testosterone, all of those. So... The only recommendation I can give you is once I evaluate and see what her body's doing, then give you ideas as to how we might be able to help. And for diabetes, we might also use stem cell therapy. So there are things that we can do. I just need to see the patient. People typically call and say, well, what should I do? And I say, you know, if you bring a car into the shop and, you know, ask the person, want to say, just look at the car, what should they do? They don't know. They need to check the spark plugs. They need to check the oil, you know, the electronic system, alternator, whatever, you know, you need to look at in a car. So I can't just guess at what she would need. We don't recommend vitamins based upon hearsay. We recommend, you know, things based upon the proof, the facts of what the body's showing. So that would be the most important part of the process.
And then she's from the Caribbean, and the diet is really, really bad, and you can't tell her anything. So that's another.
Well, that's why she's in such a difficult place, but, you know.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to bring her in, you know.
Okay, we'd love to help you out. And you have some concerns yourself?
Yes, I have a question. I was tested positive. I took the ANA anti-nuclear screen test, and I tested positive. However, my two middle fingers, and this happened 15 years ago until now, you know, they like tight and they lock.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, and my doctor 2 years ago, he looked at it and the test and that symptom, and he thought I had lupus, but then that's...
Well, you'd have to do other blood tests that are specialized to look at that a little bit more accurately, so it could be. I mean, we wouldn't know without doing the secondary autoimmune panel. Finger locking can just come from weakening and strain on the tendons and ligaments that hold your fingers, so sometimes your fingers will get stuck in a position. But we'd have to take a look at that. I would want to examine your fingers. Sometimes we do prolotherapy to help to strengthen the ligaments, and that locking of the fingers could start to change. But again, I would be more worried about the lupus, and I would do a real thorough test to evaluate that.
But do you think the fingers have anything to do with the lupus?
Well, not over the radio. I have no idea.
Doctor,
I have to look at a full... you're not listening to me. I have to see a more specialized lupus test to see whether or not there's more than just the ANA showing lupus. You know, locking of the fingers is not always or not at all frequently a sign of lupus. So we need to learn more about you. You can give a call to the office, take a look at the website, drcal.net. We'd love to help you. 516-794-0404. Can't make a diagnosis over the phone or the radio. Okay, let's go next to John in Astoria. Hi there, how are you?
Okay, thank you for taking the call.
You're welcome.
There was a big snowstorm in March, and I see the bus. I was walking to the bus stop, and I see the bus about two blocks away, and I start running as fast as I could, and I hurt my knee.
Oh, wow.
And I figured maybe...
Did you fall or slip or just just the running?
No, it was just probably because there was no warm-up. I just started running as fast as I could.
And how old are you now?
I'm 69.
Yeah, I think at 69, you know, unless you're doing some activity every day and keeping your muscles and your joints sort of tight and in good condition, if they're deconditioned somewhat, then doing that sprint, that run, could certainly create more strain or stretching on your ligaments and tendons and also put some damage on the meniscus. Did you have any testing done, an MRI?
No, I tried something, a product that has turmeric.
That's a complete waste of time, because you don't even know what you have yet. If you have a tear in the meniscus, then no vitamin is going to help. If you have a tear in your cruciate ligaments or your medial lateral collaterals, nothing's going to help. So you have to make the diagnosis first. So that's why if I were to examine you, or if you want to get an MRI done and I could sit down and go over that with you, then we have a working scenario. Then we'll be able to tell you exactly what's happening. You know, people do this. They'll take this or that or an anti-inflammatory or something that someone's selling in a store or a market or whatever, and they're not even sure what they have. So I wouldn't take an anti-inflammatory, even a prescription or a painkiller, because then you could block the pain and make the joint worse. So you have to be very careful. I'd rather have the diagnosis done with the MRI first and then tell you what to do.
Okay.
That's always the best step.
Are you still friends with Gary now?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, because he mentioned...
You know, he's so busy, you know, and I talk to him, you know, at least a couple times a month, and he's just so busy, it's hard to nail down. You know, I have lots of friends that, as well, are busy, and, you know, it's weird. It seems like, you know, 15, 20 years ago, you can get a group of people together to go out to dinner and, you know, and kind of keep that going. Now everybody's all over the place.
Yes.
So Gary's back and forth. I'll call him one time he's here, another time he's down south. I mean, and you kind of have to put it in the schedule. It's funny, but you have to call and speak to the secretary. When's he going to be free? When is he here or there next? And that's what we've been doing. But, yeah, I think he's genius. He literally is a genius.
Okay. Yeah, I think so too.
So, great friend as well. I know he whenever he mentions me on his program, which I love, I appreciate, and I respect him really more than any other. And there's many terms to call him: researcher, teacher, coach, advocate. You know, he wears many, many, many wonderful hats, and I think everybody is better off for all the hard work that he's done. And last time I was at his place, we were looking at all the videos that he's done. I mean, huge amount of crazy volume of videos and books. He's just so prolific. He's more prolific than anybody I've ever met. But, yeah, he's a gem. He's one of the best.
Okay. Thanks for taking the call.
Thank you for the call. All righty. Phone lines are open. If you'd like to call in to ask a question, you could do so right now. 1-800-848-WABC. Yeah, we really need to know what the cause of your problems or symptoms may be. And we also need to know how much damage your symptoms are correlated with. Some people have a little tear in the knee, but it can cause a lot of pain. Some people have a chronic wear and tear on the knee that they're getting used to, but it might be a lot of damage. So the MRI is the best test for your joints, whether it's your shoulders, your elbows, your wrists, hips, knees, ankles, back, neck. So that's the best test to tell us how much damage there is. For those people that have liver problems, liver enzymes, of course, sonogram of the liver, kidney as well, sonogram, CAT scan, kidney tests. So there are different tests that tell us what's happening within the area. But we need to rely on that to show us, and the important thing is to show me blood work you've had done before, because if I do a test, I could look back and see the tests you had done 2, 3, 4, 6 months ago, and see if there's a trend, if something's getting worse, or if things are changing more so. Okay, once again, 1-800-848-WABC. Give us a call. We'll chat. Let's go next to Tom in Union Beach, New Jersey. How are you?
Yes, fine, and thank you for taking the call.
You're welcome.
This relates to my wife, who's 66, and recently a bone density test showed minus 3.7 relating to the spine.
Yeah.
And one, wanted to ask, relating to the test itself, is that geared towards someone younger, like 25 or 30 years of age, or is it corrected up to the age of the person taking the test?
Well, typically those tests, and every blood test as well, has a range that they expect to be normal for that individual. So if you do a blood test and your T3 thyroid is 60, but you're only 30 years of age, that's very low. I'm giving you an example.
So the
tests are based upon people within an age category. If the bones are becoming weak and calcium spilling out into the urine, which is one of the tests that we do, or a cross-linked telopeptide's high, we know the bones are getting weak. The bone density test, the X-ray test, shows the density of the bone. So if the density is becoming weaker and that negative 2.5 is the cutoff point for osteoporosis, anything that goes beyond that 2.5 means that the bones are weak. You're not going to see numbers that low in a teenager, a 20 or a 30-year-old. You never do. So as people get into their 50s and 60s, some people have the bones become a lot weaker than when they were when they were younger. So it's something you want to act upon. We want to correct all the vitamins, all the minerals, all the hormones. Vitamin D is critically important. Magnesium, potassium, boron, calcium, exercise. All of these things have to be corrected. Thyroid, DHEA, testosterone, even in women, can help to stabilize bones. So there are multiple things that can benefit the bone.
As far as shying away from the prescription drugs, what's your feelings?
Well, we don't typically use them. I think they're more risk than they are benefit. You know, some of them, one of the side effects is esophageal cancer or jawbone destruction. So I don't really recommend meds like that. I think if you look at why a person develops osteoporosis, that's usually loss of female hormone, one of the major things, loss of DHEA, adrenal hormone, thyroid, testosterone, loss of vitamins. Once you correct those things, you know, your body will do better. And we've seen that in other areas of the body as well. Once you put exercise on board, exercise tugging on the bone tends to make the bone stronger. So, and these things are testable. We can test the blood. You can do a bunch of these things and then retest either the blood or the bone mineral density test over time and see improvement. So that's how, you know, that's the scientific way to do it.
It makes a lot of sense what you're suggesting, and we will, you know, follow that up. I might add that I have seen you in Gary Noel's videos. It's very impressive, very impressive.
Oh, thank you. You know, we were talking about Gary a moment ago. You know, he's such a great guy, and I've gone in and done so many videos for him and have helped him with, you know, books and such. The funny thing is that a few years ago, a while back, when we were trying to do a video, and here I am in a suit, we were wearing a tie, and we're in one of the rooms, and, you know, there were just ambulances that kept coming by every 2 minutes. It was crazy, so they had to stop the tape, and we had to re-roll. We were all sitting there laughing because we couldn't catch a break because all the noise in the city, and occasionally a plane would fly over. Myself and the photographers, the videographers, were laughing because, you know, it took us an hour to do a much, you know, what would have been a much shorter segment. But, yeah, we have fun every time I go in to do that.
Well, you do keep good company because he has a lot of respect from many people. And as you do also, because you provide such a service each week to many of the individuals like myself, where we better understand, you know, how to go about to help ourselves.
See, it's the most important part of my job, I think, for those people I can talk to, and certainly we do a great deal more for the people that come in to be seen, but I want people to know what the research says out there. I want them to know it's from peer-reviewed journals. I want them to know what works and what doesn't work, and how to be specific. Look at the videos. Look at the articles on my website. So no doctor has videos of patients with their results. No doctor has 2,000 articles, or more than that, actually 2,206 articles for people to read about. These are studies, and you could read the abstract of the article, understand what it says, you know. So, yes, Gary's goal and my goal has always been to educate people, make them learn, you know, give them a little bit of, you know, something to make them feel hungry for more knowledge and learning.
Well, you both succeed in a big way.
Thank you.
I would like to, you know, thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate that a lot. Thank you so much. Have a good day now. Okay, 1-800-848-WABC. If you'd like to call in now, ask your question, do so. Don't wait for the end of the program. Let's go to Veronica in Brooklyn.
Yes.
How are you?
Hi, Doctor. Hi, I'm fine.
How can I help you?
I'm calling because I had an MRI, and it shows that I have a tear in the arm, the shoulder.
Yeah.
And, I'm wondering, is surgery a good way to go?
I'm not a big fan of surgery because some people have surgery, and the downtime for them to be able to get functioning again is pretty long. It can be months and months. Some people don't do well after surgical procedures. Some people hate the anesthesia from surgery. I've heard that a great deal. Typically, if I were to see your MRI, I might recommend, if it's very minor, platelet-rich plasma therapy, where we take your own blood, spin it, and inject the growth factors into where you have the tear to try to create repair. And for a lot of people that have a minor problem, that may be all you need. Some people do one of them. Some people do two or three of them. But it's a simple procedure. It takes 15 minutes to spin your blood, and then we do the treatment. If your shoulder is worse than mild, we may opt to use stem cell therapy, where we can take some of the bone marrow from your body, your own cells, and we go to the area of the back part of the crest of your hip. If you were to think of where your belt sits, on the side, your waist, and you kind of walk your fingers down that bump, you follow the ridge of that bump. There's a wider, fatter part of that bump towards the back. We sterilize, numb the area so it doesn't hurt, extract the fluid through a pinhole, spin it, and then we take that stem cell fluid and inject it into the damaged joint or damaged ligament, tendon. So that's by far the greatest repair mechanism ever in the history of health or medicine. Because you're colonizing the area and you're putting brand new cells in to create growth and repair. And you could look on my website and there are videos there of people who've done it. Shoulders, hips, ankles, knees, MS, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, stroke, all sorts of things, you know, that we use to help. So that might be the best mechanism of all, but I certainly would want to see your MRI first.
How long does the therapy take to heal?
Well, what happens over the course of week to week is that you're repairing more and more tissue. If it's a mild amount of damage, then you'd feel the results quicker. If it's a moderate amount, it's going to take longer, you know, a few months. So I can't tell you exactly what you're going to feel and when, but we've had some pretty crazy results. We had a patient, a lovely woman who's a firefighter, and she has MS, and we saw her and evaluated her and treated her, and she had numbness from the elbows down to her hands, knees down to the feet. Within about 10 or 15 minutes, as we finished the procedure and we, you know, dripped some of the stem cell liquid by droplet into the nose, she said the sensation in her arms and hands came right back. And the numbness and tingling went away in her knees down to her feet when I called her a couple of days afterward. She said the only area that was, you know, numb or tingly was under her right arch of her foot. So that's spectacular. And typically, again, I can't tell you how many cells you have damaged in any part of your body. If I could, then I can give you a better idea as to how long it would take to start seeing things. But most people start to see improvement over a relatively short period of time. It could be within a few weeks to a month.
All right. Yeah, I would like to consider that.
Sure. Take a look at the website because you'll see some great information. And, you know, we'll be able to, you could look at videos of 15, you know, people that have done it. A few more videos are going to come up in a couple of weeks. We're shooting them next week. There are 2,000 articles on the website. A majority of information about stem cell therapy. So you look at all of that. And, of course, give us a call. We'd love to help you out. The website's drcal.net, drcal.net. And the office is 516-794-0404. Thank you so much for your call. Edward is next. Hi there, Edward. How are you? How are you doing today?
Okay. Well, I have a problem with neuropathy in both my legs. Now, I understand it's caused by arthritis. Diabetes.
Well, there's diabetic neuropathy where obviously it comes from the excess sugars damaging the nerves. There's neuropathy from having a bad back where the discs in your back are pushing so much against the nerve roots that the nerve root signal that's supposed to go down your legs is altered and damaged. For people that have diabetic neuropathy, I think changing the mechanism of diabetes is one of the most important things to do right off the bat. So low-carb exercise, correcting your vitamins, minerals, and hormones. And then we also, for the central core of the issue, where your pancreas is not making the cells that make insulin, we use stem cell therapy. And we've had people have terrific results with that. There's a video on the website of a person we did stem cell therapy on who was diabetic and was non-diabetic in 2 months. We might also inject down the leg where the nerves are affected to try to improve the neuropathy and, you know, put the injections of the stem cells close to the nerves. And you heard me just talk about the woman who has MS, and she had a, you know, pretty bad neurologic condition. She still does, but she had improvement in a very short period of time. Also, for all types of neuropathy, we do intravenous alpha-lipoic acid IV. So that's a vitamin IV that helps to, you know, stabilize your nerves and decreases the severity of neuropathy. Right, so now, you have two different ways to go at it.
Yeah, right now, I'm taking this gabapentin.
Yep.
I'm taking 300 milligrams a day, three times a day, 300 milligrams.
And has the neuropathy reversed? Of course not. Has the neuropathy reversed?
Not really.
No, because you're not changing the cause. You're treating the symptom.
Yeah.
So as I mentioned, we could use intravenous alpha-lipoic acid, and that could help to change the neuropathy. We've seen that. Or treat the entire mechanism by also treating the diabetes. Work on the diabetes.
Yeah. I've been trying to cut out the sugar and all, you know.
That's one part of a complex picture. So it's low carb, below 30 grams a day, correcting your vitamins, your minerals, your hormones, doing some activity, exercise, so you can get the blood flowing, deliver your vitamins and hormones, and then stem cells.
People have been telling me to walk, I don't do much walking, and they're telling me I should walk more often, you know.
Well, that one recommendation is important, but it's an entire program worth.
Right.
You have to do the low carbs, the walking, you know, correct your hormones, vitamins. There's a lot to do to get your body to respond better.
Do you have an office in New Jersey, by the way?
No, sir. Just Long Island, two offices on Long Island. One in Garden City, which is about a half hour east of Manhattan, and then another office in Plainview, a little further east.
Okay.
All righty. Take a look at the website. You'll be amazed.
And what would it be website? What would it be under?
DrCal.net, DrCal.net.
.net.
Yeah, DrCal, DrCal.
Okay, .net.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Have a good day. Okay, let's go next to Dan. Hi there. How are you?
How you doing, Dr. Calpe? I appreciate you taking my call.
You're welcome.
So basically, I'm calling. I find your show very interesting. I'm listening
to
your radio show. So I want to make this as quick as possible because I've taken I just finished my first year of law school, and I took off from seeing doctors regarding an issue that has been bothering me for quite some time.
What problem do you have? Let's kind of go start with that.
Not a problem. So at first, I was experiencing a lot of pain in my shoulder, weakness in my arm, things like that. So it was more neuromuscular. I saw a spine doctor who said I looked okay, no scapulary winging, things like that. And
how did that pain start? I mean, something happened to make it occur, right?
Right. So I was a tri-seasonal athlete in high school, and then I moved on to college, and I was doing a lot of Olympic weightlifting. And I moved into CrossFit, and I was doing a pull-up or a muscle-up where I pull myself over the bar. And I actually I hurt myself. And, you know, my whole neck froze. I felt like I was in flexion for a while. And that went away. And, you know, maybe a year later, this is coming senior year of college, I went to see a, spine doctor, a neurologist. And he said I had a brachial plexus injury. He took a couple MRIs of my shoulder and also concluded that I may need surgery on my shoulder. So he recommended I go see an orthopedist.
The brachial plexus is a nerve bundle in your armpit, and that doesn't have really anything to do with the ligaments that hold your and tendons that hold your shoulder together. I mean, if you have a torn rotator cuff, then you might need surgery for that. If you have a tear in the supraspinatus, et cetera, biceps tendon, you might need surgery if it's bad enough. I typically would do stem cells for the shoulder injury, but brachial plexus and then surgery don't necessarily make sense to me.
Right. So the orthopedist said, instead of going right into surgery, we should address the brachial plexus injury. So he recommended I get therapy for that. So I went to the physical therapist. And they actually were asking me about my symptoms. I was explaining it to them. And they looked at my MRIs because I have, it was quite stressful. I was getting a bunch of MRIs. Like I probably have 7 of my entire spine, my shoulder, my brachial plexus, et cetera. So it was extremely tiresome because I'm 24 and I want to move on with my life. You know, I'm used to dealing with pain and I could deal with pain, but. You know, I was finding
so. So, what's the sort of the final comment on what they want to do, what they think you have? I still am not sure.
Right.
You know what's happening.
The physical therapist said they shouldn't be treating me for what the doctor was treating me there for, or sent me there for. So I went back to the doctor, and he kind of said, "You know what? Take that place off my list," and didn't acknowledge their opinion essentially. And what I'm essentially calling for is, what do you do in that situation? How do you find someone to kind of gather up the narrative and you know, figure it all out?
You have to have someone who looks at everything that's been done, whether it's MRIs, nerve conduction tests to see if there are nerve irregularities that are there, tears or damage to tissue. I mean, I do this all the time, but... And I'm be the first to tell you, I'm not an orthopedic surgeon, so I'm not typically interested in doing surgery for whatever you come in for. You know, I'm not a neurologist, so I'm not typically going to put you on Neurontin or nerve meds. But you need to look at all the tests that are being done, and then, you know, as a detective, pick out, you know, what's there causing your symptom and what's not. Again, without examining you and seeing your range of motion or strength or loss of strength or all these tests, I can't guess as to what you should do next because I haven't seen you. So in something as complicated as this, I need to look at all your tests and examine you and see what testing you haven't done. Did they do an EMG or nerve conduction?
They did. That's where they test. That's the EKG or EMG?
EMG.
Yes, they did the EMG on my, and that's how they figured out, or that's how the neurologist figured out I had a brachial plexus injury.
And so what do you feel now? What do you, when you go to move or do activity, what do you feel?
It's funny because they told me it was supposed to go away after a year with no
I can't do a 20-minute you know, conversation with one person on the show tonight. So when you do activity or move now, what do you feel? Do you have pain? Do you have restricted range of motion?
It's more restricted range of motion in my neck, and a lot of weakness and pain. And
well, then some of this, or a good percentage of this, may be coming from your neck. There may be issues. I'd have to see the MRI of your neck and look at the EMG and really get a handle on this. That's as best as I can do. I can't diagnose you over the phone. So try to get all that together for me if you want. I'd certainly love to see you, and then we can make sense of all this. Thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Manny in Manhattan. Hi there. How are you?
Hello. Hello.
How are you, Manny?
I'm good. I have a couple of questions. I used to listen to Gary Null, so he influenced me throughout my life in a good way. I've taken NAC for many years, CoQ10. I take serrapeptase enzyme for the heart.
Have you had blood testing done to see your vitamin, mineral levels, hormone levels?
Yeah, I recently was low in vitamin D, and one of the reasons is because I have a lot of erosion on my teeth, and I cracked a tooth, and all kinds of things. But I refuse to go to dentists because they just, if a tooth is low, I have some erosion that's low, they're just going to root canal it and maybe pull it and cap it. I really don't believe in any of that. I want to grow my teeth, as I've heard, maybe possible. Sharks grow their teeth. And now the
completely different animal. They have rows of teeth that keep coming up all the time. That's completely different. So you can't compare humans to sharks. Similarly, as I have spoken to other patients about, I would need to see what your vitamin levels, mineral levels, hormone levels are, heavy metal exposure, blood and urine. Do you have fillings in your teeth that are mercury that are giving you lots of metals? Your tooth problem or problem with your teeth is happening for a reason, and I don't think anybody has looked at that thoroughly yet. You know, my initial blood test, when we gather all the questions in your history, could be 20, 25 pages. No one does that. But I take every comment you say, you know, you make into concern and put that together to really evaluate your body.
Well, I went to an orthomolecular psychiatrist once. They did a hair analysis.
That's not a real thing. So you have to see somebody who's either, you know, board certified in anti-aging medicine, you know, who does all of these things, someone that has a psychiatry training, who's just using nutrients to help for psychiatric disorders, is what orthomolecular psychiatry is. But that's a very specialized, you know, field, if we call it that. So you're not really learning everything about your body to see what's going on. What if you have infection? What if you have other things that are happening that you're totally missing because you're not testing these things?
Can I just ask you something? Because I do research online, as many people do, and I saw that the latest research shows that ultrasound, low-frequency ultrasound, lipus, and resveratrol implanted in a tooth nerve will get the nerve to grow, and the tooth will grow.
I haven't seen that. I don't think just one antioxidant, one nerve, is going to make your teeth grow. It has to do with a lot of things. CoQ10 is important for the gums. Your ability to make new cells is really based upon and the therapy that we do that creates and repairs tissue, which stem cell therapy puts billions of cells into an area to make brand new tissue of every part of your body. Resveratrol is not going to get new blood vessels and new, you know, pulp and, you know, new dentin and every part of the teeth, you know, recreated. I've seen no literature, you know, on that at all. But yeah, other than, you know, learning about in the entirety of you, I wouldn't just say, well, go try resveratrol injections in your teeth. I don't think anybody even does that. I don't think that's available. I haven't seen that or heard, you know, of that anywhere. But if you like, always give us a call at the office. We'd love to help you out. You can come in as a patient. We'll learn about your body in a great deal, you know, great deal of ways to help to maximize your health. Thank you for your call. 1-800-848-WABC if you'd like to call in to ask a question. 1-800-848-9222. And we'll get you up on the air. Again, a lot of individuals, and this is just human nature, I think, a lot of individuals try to use a vitamin or a substance to try to fix something that they have. The problem is you don't know what the cause is. So there may be something different causing your problems. So when you use what you're using, you're going blind. You know, you're just, you're using it without any understanding. And I, over 30 years, I've seen thousands and thousands and thousands of people, and just about everybody will say, well, I'm going to try this to see if it helps my stomach. But when you find out that either they're not making enzymes, or they have an infection, or they have food allergy that they didn't even consider because they didn't think that food allergy could cause, you know, their colitis or Crohn's or psoriasis or any number of things that we've correlated with, that you're missing the nail. You're not hitting the nail on the head. So that's why looking at all this information will guide you as to exactly what you should do. Once again, 1-800-848-WABC. If you'd like to call in to ask a question, you could do so now. That's why before I was talking about dietary factors and risk of inflammatory bowel disease. This is a great study published in the American Journal of Gastroenterology. Talks about a variety of different foods are bad for your body, mostly sugars. You know, a variety of things can inflame or irritate your gut. You could be allergic to something that you think is good and it's causing the problem, but you don't know it because you're not having an antibody response build up so much to cause a symptom. And immediately it's causing delayed reaction. You know, bad fats, animal fats are bad. Omega-3, olive oil, those are good. The common foods that we see that typically irritate the bowel are the grains, wheat, rye, oat, rice. Other things that can irritate the grain that are common, soy. Sometimes chocolate, nuts are a common allergen. So we have to look at these things and see what's causing the problem, pull them away, and your body gets better. So it's most important to be able to understand the causes of your problem. Okay, 1-800-848-WABC. Call in now before the end of the program. We're getting close to the end. Let's go to Carol Ann in Whiting, New Jersey. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question regarding the Greek blood test.
Yeah.
I was taking a drug called Valsartan for two years, and it was just a world recall.
Yeah.
And it causes cancer. And
they believe that, and I don't know if there's two different formulations of it, one that might have been made in China and one that's made, you know, in the U.S. So I don't know. I started looking at this, but I don't have any absolute confirmation on it. So the idea now is to withdraw that medication. You see, it's amazing to me that when, you know, the drug companies make a drug and they say it's safe and the FDA says, okay, yeah, you know, all of a sudden you start to see problems as it's been out in the population for a couple of years. So the idea would be to get away from the Valsartan. I mean,
my doctor immediately put me on another drug. And this particular Valsartan was made in China.
Yeah, that might be the problem.
So what I want to know is, what do I do? How do I find out if I have any kind of cancer cells in my body as a result of taking the drugs?
Yeah, there's no way to determine that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no specific test that the local labs will do that says yes or no for cancer.
Okay. So the Greek blood test that you've spoken about, that was...
Yeah, the Greek test is done by a lab in Greece, and the lab is Research Genetic Cancer Center, RGCC. You can just put R period G period C period C period in the computer and see the lab, but they're not likely going to do a test on someone that's just taken a blood pressure medication that may have potential risk for cancer, because it doesn't say everybody that ever took that, you know, medication at whatever dose got cancer. So it's likely that you wouldn't. So the recall is not because everybody gets cancer from the drug. They think there may be some correlation with that. So at this point, I don't think you really need to worry.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well,
I'd be more worried if your vitamin D was low.
It is very low.
Yeah, that's going to be a higher risk of cancer than almost anything else.
Yes,
because
doctor,
conversely, when your vitamin D levels are at 100 from a gigantic meta-analysis study, it shows your risk of all cancers declines by 77%. So you've got to get your vitamin and mineral levels in the perfect range. That's one of the greatest things you could do to prevent cancer. Get rid of animal foods, animal fats, you know, get your organic foods in, your lots of vegetables. So there's a lot to do once we do the big test that we do.
Okay.
But that would be the best first step because you're improving parts of your body that we're evaluating. So,
right.
Yeah, if you like, take a look at the website, learn some good info, drcal.net. We'd love to help you out. Let's go to Walter in Huntington.
Yes, hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you, and thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Doctor, my question is about the feet and the possible benefit of prolotherapy on the feet. My arches have collapsed after, you know, many years of hard work, and... I was found by a podiatrist to be vitamin D deficient, so he gave me a therapeutic dose of vitamin D, which I took, and I did have some relief. But
well, you have to recheck your vitamin D and all your vitamin levels to make sure that whatever recommendations you're taking are putting you in the right range. Prolo for the feet works very well. It works very well for most ligaments if you have a mild problem, and prolotherapy is easy to do. It's not uncomfortable because we can freeze your skin a little bit and inject the foot of the arch. It's not going to give the arches of an 18-year-old, but if it helps to stabilize your foot and take away pain, great. If that doesn't work, and in some cases it doesn't, then we opt to go to platelet-rich plasma therapy, where we take your blood, spin it, and inject the growth factors from your blood into the area to try to create more growth. So there are different options as to what can be done depending upon how bad your feet are. I wouldn't know until I saw either an MRI, maybe an X-ray, some sort of test. So you have a few options as to what to that would help.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your help. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you for the call. Take a look at the website again, drcal.net. The office is 516-794-0404. Let's go to Michelle in Union, New Jersey, one of my favorite towns. Little
yes,
old Union. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm trying to get find out if my mother, who's 91, can safely transition from proton pump inhibitors, which she's been on for many years, decades, to hydrochloric acid.
Well, it's hard to say without testing. I mean, you know, proton pump inhibitors are trying to decrease the acid available to the gut to take away symptoms.
Right.
And then using acid, you know, may worsen her symptoms. So it's not as though that's just a quick flip of a switch. So we need to see why her stomach problem is there. And certainly at 90, she's not going to be making her enzymes. You know, we could do the Heidelberg test to look to see what her enzymes are, even to see what her hydrochloric acid levels are. You know, learn about the body first, then you can talk about adjusting things. You can't just flip it like that.
So,
you know,
could it possibly cause more damage than good is what I'm...
It could.
It could.
Because we don't know what's going on in that environment. We have to test it first, you know. Always test to see what's happening, and then you can start to make changes.
She's very, she's pretty infirmed, and the problem is, I know she's deficient in a lot of vitamins and minerals, and recently she's been having GERD so bad, and also heart issues, but I think the heart issues, I've gotten her on magnesium.
Well, for just about everybody I've seen that has GERD, once you cut out the grains, bread, rice, pasta, oatmeal, cut out all the grains, GERD symptoms drop dramatically. In many cases, they go completely away. And I can tell you, because I've been saying this for many years, to tell people to stay away from the grains and see what happens. And their stomach issues drop dramatically. Even with, you know, colitis and ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, cutting out the grains, a lot of people do so much better. So that may be, you know, an important option. But again, I haven't seen her, so I can't really make a recommendation.
I understand. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for your call.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Mary, quick question. How can I help you?
I have a beginning osteoporosis, 70 years old. And I wonder if going on Fosamax, is that a good idea?
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of side effects to Fosamax. Look that up online. Typically, for osteoporosis, we correct all your vitamins, your minerals, vitamin D, boron. We'll correct declining hormones, thyroid, DHEA, testosterone. I think that's a better way to do it than to use meds that have bad side effects. Thank you for your call. Friends, thank you for listening. God bless you all. Have a wonderful day. I'll be back Saturday morning live on the amazing WABC. Bye-bye now.